It's my first experience in PI. It's very exciting. So I'll talk about the boundary bulk relations. I put a relation instead of a duality for some reason, or correspondence, because it seems a little complicated for me, so in topological order. Okay, so the talk will be weird to most of people because I cannot even say it's a mathematical or a physical. It's weird. So let me start. You don't really need any background. You can just follow the main test. But the comment I want to make, or example I give, might be more involved. But so in this talk, whenever I say a topological order, I mean really a. In our paper, we said it's a local topological. What I mean by that, it just means a topological order. So in the future, I'm going to just write TO just to save time. So it's topological order defined on an open disk. Let's say, let me even add a dimension. N plus one space-time dimension. Define an open n disk, n disk as a space dimension. Okay, this is a space manifold. Or if you want a space-time manifold, the space-time manifold will be this. Let me call this n disk dn. Right, this is a space-time manifold. That's my convention. I really mean local because the notion of phase, physicists are constantly talking about a phase on a closed manifold. But to me, a phase always a local concept. If you define it on a different closed manifold, why you call them the same phase is because locally they're the same. Okay, so I want to make a remark. If you want a global invariant, if you want a global invariant, locally you can have observables, excitation, whatever. But if you want to compute a global invariant, then you need some kind of thing called a factorization algebra, factorization homology. I just come from a talk of factorization homology. For example, what kind of factorization homology in the global is the what the physicist is really familiar with? Is a ground state degeneracy. Ground state degeneracy, yeah, in physics. This is a typical example for factorization homology. Factorization homology is just doing integral, if you like. Just integrate, okay? You have an open set, well, you have something on a global one, just integrate. There is a fancy name called factorization homology. But it's just corresponding to the what the physicist had in mind. It's ground state degeneracy. Okay, I'll make more comment about this in the end. Okay, so I want to first set my what do I mean by topological order. Then the next statement I want to make is that not all topological order can be realized by a lattice model in the same dimension. The second statement I want to make. So the example is this. So what do we know is that, let's say toric code model. So toric code, we know that in a Bach, you can have these excitations. E, M, what's the other one? I would call that F. There are four fundamental excitations. I think condensed matter all know this, right? And but it allows gapped boundary. You can have a gapped boundary. Okay. This gap boundary contain non-trivial particle. If you condense M particle, you can have a trivial particle, even labeled a trivial particle, then you can have electric charge. This is called the electric charge, magnetic flux. What is the name of this? I don't know. Yeah. And so on the boundary, you can have a non-trivial excitation. When you have a non-trivial excitation, that means this is a one-dimensional, this is 1 plus 1D, okay? So you have a one plus, non-trivial 1 plus 1D topological order. But according to Chen, Gu, and Wen, there's no non-trivial. A non-trivial topological order in 1 plus 1D. Their statement, when they say there's a non-trivial, really means anomaly free. Okay. Well, they didn't use this terminology at all. Because there are some kind of topological order can be realized as a boundary of a topological order of one dimension higher. Okay. So this you cannot realize just at, you cannot realize this phase just in 1D lattice. Okay, in of course, in this case, it is realized as a boundary of a 2D lattice. Okay, that's the second statement I want to make. So because of that, we introduced the following terminologies. There's another one in the back, right? Maybe let me not use that for now. Okay, so I want to introduce this. So, definition. A topological order is called anomalous if it cannot be realized as a lattice model of the same dimension. Okay? Well, then a topological order is called anomaly free. Well, we also give another name called closed. You will see the meaning of it later, if otherwise. Okay, that's a consequence of this. Okay. All right, the third statement then. Well, if this is true, here's the statement. Any topological order, anomalous or not anomalous, should be can be realized as a defect, a gapped, okay, otherwise, a gapped defect in a lattice model of higher dimension. Higher, but still finite. Okay, still finite, of higher dimension. This looks like tautological.
Is it conjectural?
No, it should be obvious in the following sense. If even that is not possible, that means you can only realize the infinite dimension, and we just simply think this topological doesn't exist. Right? That's okay. Looks like a tautological statement. You can always realize it in the finite dimension.
The definition of the
Yeah. Yeah, you can view that as topological. Yeah, but I can't imagine anything can only be realized in the infinite dimensional lattice model. That's something. Where's the eraser?
Yeah, it's out there.
Yeah, left. Oh, this one. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Okay. So why I want to say that? Because once this is possible, right? So you can always realize the topological order as something with a higher codimension, like this. So you realize the topological order as some lattice model with higher dimension. Okay, but then you can always do this. You wrap it, okay? You wrap it like a cigar. Then you squeeze it, okay? You squeeze it, and you got this. I want to claim that this is still gapped. It's still a gapped system. If you start with a gapped, this is gapped, okay? This is also gapped, okay? So what does this mean? This means that, a potentially anomalous, why should I put it in there? I mean, topological order can be realized as a gapped boundary of a lattice, or another topological order of one dimension higher. One dimension higher. Okay, that's my statement I want to make. So a topological order can always be realized as the gapped boundary of a one dimensional higher topological order. That's the statement I want to make. Any objections? Okay, so here, start from now, I want to do something really unusual. So all the argument I made was quite formal, okay? So we want to proceed in a very general argument. Looks like every sentence is empty. There's nothing going on, but until maybe at some point you will see something non-trivial happened. Okay, so of course, we want to have a... So what's my next thing? So, as a mathematician, I don't even know if I'm a mathematician, but the goal is eventually we want to find a mathematical foundation of a topological order, but that's too hard. Okay, so that's, we don't even know how to define it. We don't know how to define topological order. But what we know is this. We know that some intuition about topological order. So a topological order. Let me just use this to denote dimension, space-time dimension, okay? Well, we know that it should be defined as some kind of if you start it from an ultraviolet point of view, from a microscopic point of view, okay? So you have a lattice model, you should quotient off some kind of equivalent relations. That would define a phase. Well, order is a phase, right? Well, that's the intuition we have, right? But we don't know how to define it, of course.
When you think about the topological order, is the topological theory to get out of it enough to capture it completely, or do you think that it's more?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Actually, it's generally believed that the low-dimensional effective field theory is a topological field theory. But it's not much useful to me at this stage. But I will make a comment about this in the second point.
Because this can be much stronger, right? It's equivalent. I mean, when you say this equivalent, do you really mean just having the same physics at low energy?
Yeah.
Something more complicated.
Having physics in low energy.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
So just having the same effect as here.
Yeah. What's TO? TO represents the topological order. N plus one is n plus one d topological order. So it's space-time. Okay, space-time dimension. Condensed matter will always not talk about space-time, but you know, let me just use the space-time. So okay. So but with this in mind, okay. So I will sort of formulate this. We don't know what that is, right? But we still have some intuition about it, right? So let me write down that intuition. Okay, the intuition is this. So let's say two lattice model. two lattice models for, well, okay, two lenses are equivalent. Equivalent? Well, that means, you know, they should describe the same topological face, right? So if they're equivalent, if it's not definition, it's kind of an intuitive definition, okay? Some kind of partial information. There exists a neighborhood. So let's say here is a, okay, let's say here. I have a topological order, all right? And there's something in the box, okay? But I have this exactly same topological order, and here's the box, lattice, okay? But these two are two different lattice model realization of same phase, right? So what I want to argue is that, well, this should tell me how to define the equivalence. My equivalence will be the following. Because how you say on the boundary they are the same, okay? I have to say there is a neighborhood, okay? There is a neighborhood of the boundary such that you can deform one lattice model to the other without closing the gap. Okay, such that there is a neighborhood of the boundary, such that, we can deform one to the other without closing the gap. Yeah. Well, the lattice might not be the same, but what I'm saying is that you can, in a neighborhood, you can deform one to the other.
What is the model of the lattice? Yeah. What is the model of Hamiltonian?
No, I didn't spare. Well, just your lattice, you choose a. Of course, there is a lot of subtlety. You know, once you choose the Hamiltonian, choose the local Hilbert space, very often you cannot deform them. Sometimes you have to enlarge it.
But without Hamiltonian, how can you define a gap?
Well, I pre-assume everybody know what this should be. It contains a lot of other things, and that other things, what other thing is, there is no consensus of that. But, you know, let's take it just for...
Maybe I didn't get it. Suppose you consider toric code.
Yeah.
Kinetic model.
Yeah.
And a string app.
Yeah.
We have defined on different lattices.
Yeah.
And using different
operators. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a duality between them, but this is certainly not a deformation. There's no deformation from one to the other.
You have to take my... It's not a definition, okay? I just give you intuition. So the deform means you have to also enlarge this. You have to enlarge the Hilbert space.
So do you mean just connect? But it's important because you can connect them?
No. It's not connect them. I have not do the connection yet. I'm going to do later. Okay, so I just means in a neighborhood, if you somehow nicely enlarge the local Hilbert space and so become large enough, then you can deform one to the other. This is not a definition, okay? It's just intuition, yeah.
By deforming, what do you mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the notation? En plus one, or what is that?
Cn plus one to represent the phase, topological order. Just represent the topological order.
But the n is not the dimension.
Yeah, n is just n plus one. Space time dimension.
That's a c prime, or?
Yeah, it's the same c. So. They represent the same topological order, but they have a different lattice realization. Yeah.
Why is it not enough to say that they compute the same things at low energy? That all compute calculations.
Yeah. I want to. What?
What dimensions are these lattice models in at the n plus?
What is the dimension of lattice mass? So this should be n plus 2. Yeah. D, capital D, or it's just n plus one, let's say space-time. This is space-time, like a space-time, okay.
I think the flat paths have an imagination of how the deformation can be done.
Uh-huh.
I think one can imagine something tend to be larger lattice model that can encompass encompass both models into the same formulation.
Yeah.
And for example, take a very simple example. Suppose the information we involve just locally enlarge a triangle or shrink a triangle so that when the triangle is small, you can shrink a face widen the ribbons, for example. Then it's one of the two models. And in the other extreme, you shrink the ribbons, but enlarge the faces. Maybe
you can just put on top of the lattice how many lattices you want that trigger that are in a trigger phase, and then
trigger
the formation.
You would require the same lattice.
Doesn't matter. You can take a square lattice and on top of it, I put an hexagonal lattice with a trivial phase, and then I can deform the product into something trivial. Square lattice plus something.
So you are just making it more precise. So you're stacking more trivial one. You know, maybe give you enough room for a local Hilbert space. Then you can deform.
But I can have a different model defined on a different lattice, but eventually the model is equivalent to.
Yeah, it could be.
The fact that lattice does not look the same does not object to this definition. It's just superimpose as much as you want.
Yeah.
As long as it's clear.
Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I should set. We don't have definition. Okay. We don't have definition, but we hope in the future there might be a definition. Okay. You see, today I'm going to do something really strange to condense matter. Okay, this is just intuition. We don't know how to define it. But there is a belief, right? We believe God exists, or we believe the definition exists. If you have that belief, that's enough for us to proceed. We believe that there is a definition, but we just don't know. Okay? So, all right. So now what I want to say is that so this is on the one side. On the other side, we know that in a long wavelength, you use your terminology. It's like low energy limit. In this limit, we also know that there's some other thing that characterizes topological order. Okay, so it is generally believed. So let me. It's generally believed. So here is a belief. In the low energy limit, in the low energy limit, topological order is characterized up to invertible topological orders by excitations, topological excitations in this, These topological excitations are, up to invertible TO. What I mean by that is in a 2 plus 1D, we know that topological excitation can be classified by modular sensor category. But this is not enough because there's also E8 quantum Hall states. E8 quantum Hall state is sort of invertible because this state does not have any non-trivial topological excitation. Okay, so it does not catch this information at all. So up to invertible, then you get this. Okay. Well, of course, in the future, if we have a complete story, we should find a how to combine this, how to unify this two picture. And right now, we don't know. Okay. Oh, but by the way, I want to say that the breeding, and of course, not only by topological excitation, also by fusion breeding, where sometimes we also have a spin of all these things. Okay, all this data also should be included as a low energy limit. You might want to call outer parameter. So this, so you might want to call all these structures are some kind of a outer parameter. All right, so we have this intuition. I think it's enough for us to do something. Now I can use... it can have strings in higher dimension, but in two dimension, they're particles for some reason. I'll comment on that. Actually, you also have one-dimensional defect. Yeah, but those, all the one-dimensional defect, you can prove. They all come from all these particles by condensation. So
does it matter to you that these are actual excitations? I mean, I can define the line observable in theory.
Uh-huh.
Without having to drag a path, the natural massive particle along the trajectory.
I'm not sure I understand the question. Can you?
So this, the things that are in the model tensor category are just line observable from my topological field theory, right?
Yeah.
They might be an actual physical particle that I'm dragging along some path. But they could also be defined as this defect in the lattice, right?
Yeah. I think what I mean is defect. No. So the topological excitation in my definition will be the essentially just equivalent to defect.
Okay.
It's not a really excitation in your sense.
In this relation, what's the role of low energy? Why is it low energy and not?
Well, the low energy just means that you don't see the lattice model structure at all. You just you only see something you can measure in the long wavelengths.
But the topological excitations also exist. It belongs in the lattice.
They also exist in the lattice. You can see that in the lattice.
So,
yeah.
Again, what's the
relations? Okay. So
why do we need to go to the low energy limit to make this?
I'm not saying you have to, but you can. That's just what I'm saying. There is some connection between this. On the lattice model, you can define some kind of local excitations. Local operator algebras. This topological excitation is different from the Euler excitation in physics, is that these excitations cannot be created or annihilated by local operators. As a consequence, they are modules of this local operator algebra. So that's the connection, because this local operator algebra really come from the picture from above, right? Because it can be constructed from the lattice. I'm going to give a talk tomorrow, which will talk about this local operator algebra, how to construct those, and how to connect to topological excitation tomorrow. Okay. All right. So now I want to continue. So even though we don't have any, a good definition, but that intuition is good enough for others to say something non-trivial. So the first one I want to say is, just want to make sure that I have everything in order.
What is the meaning of invertible?
Oh, invertible. Let's forget it. I said it. You know, forget it. Yeah, because in my talk, I essentially ignored it. Yeah, but you can intuitively say. Just in this context, you can all the invertible topological are those topological order with that have no non-trivial topological excitations.
Wouldn't you say that the thing that you get the low energy limit is a topological field theory?
Yeah. So essentially, yeah.
Then you can wonder what kind of minimal data you need to describe it.
Yeah. But you know, if you want to say topological field theory, I would be cautious because you know. Different people have a different opinion.
I know what the quantum field theory is.
Yeah.
And the quantum field theory, was stress tensor.
Yeah. Depends on what kind of a point of view you have. Then quickly you will see that there's some subtlety. So then that's why I don't want to use the word topological field theory. But even though it is topological field theory, yeah. Okay, so. Everything, I'm going to put a lemma because just show you to that I'm a mathematician, but I put these on there, just means it's not really a lemma, but I even give a title for this, called hypothesis. It is a hypothesis, okay? We only use some very strange, unrigorous, incomplete information to prove it. So the hypothesis is that for a given, it's just a topological order, okay, of this dimension, there is a unique bulk of the bulk is unique. Well, what is the bulk? I mean, the bulk is this one, you know, the one dimension higher, only one dimension higher. Why is that? Essentially, it's, well, the argument is if you have a two lattice model realizing the same, okay, realizing the same phase, then we know that in a neighborhood you can always, you know, cut some neighborhood here, all right? I will do some deformation. You see, I don't even know how to deform, as you said. I don't know, okay? But, you know, that's the intuition. We want to deform them such that these two models become identical in this neighborhood. Become identical in the neighborhood, then what we do is we just identify them. Identify them, so that's what we got, okay? So here might be, we just glue here by brute force, okay? But then you see what happened is that because here in the region here is the same, right? The only non-trivial defect I can create is far away from the boundary. Only non-trivial defect. Okay, by our intuition of this, I forgot to say, I'm really thinking about the topological field theory, so everything is topologically invariant, so that you can deform in a sense. Okay, so what I'm gonna do now is, you know, using the intuition in the second picture, then you just throw them away. Okay, you put it back, then nothing, just gone. Well, this two phase is the same, so that's my argument. Remark: I'm constantly looking for your. Oh, after I leave this, then it's gone. As I did over there. When I leave it, it's gone. Okay. Remark. In 2+1D, the box is unique. Okay. You can prove this by anion condensation. Well, this is just a remark. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you can sort of ignore it. Well, maybe let me give you this example. So toric code. And if you put on the boundary only the E and M, you can prove that this is the Dreamfield center of the boundary theory. Okay. But if you don't know, this is just a remark. So it's irrelevant to the main flow of my talk, okay? But this, basically, I can tell what the basic argument is. Basic argument is that in the bulk, you have all the topological excitations form a modular sensor category, okay? Let me give it's a modular sensor category, okay? Then here you got so here's a modular sensor category, and here you get a so-called, is a unitary, okay? Unitary fusion category. That's the boundary. Because on the boundary, excitation can only be fused. You can only fuse two particle, but you cannot braid, so there is no braiding, okay? Then you can prove, we can prove that, if here is empty, if here is a trivial phase, sorry, let me just put empty, here is nothing there, then you can show that all of these boundaries are created by condensing certain particle. Very unique kind of particle called Lagrangian algebra. Then you can prove the statement that this D is a, let's call that E. Then you can prove that this is a Dreamfield center of E. Okay, this serve as evidence for this. Okay, but this argument will be problematical because we don't know how to generalize it to higher dimension, of course, because you know it's involved too many things. Okay, so let's just go ahead with the abstract nonsense. What time is that? Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
That example is about what? About
1
plus
1d
or
2? It's 1 plus 1d, sorry. This is 1 plus 1d. This is inside is 2 plus 1d.
So the bulk of 1 plus 1d is unique.
Yeah. If you fix the boundary, gap the boundary, then the bulk is unique. Yeah.
If you put this boundary here in a manifold, yeah, at least in the Hilbert space of the higher dimensional theory, right?
Yeah.
For that manifold.
Yeah.
So I guess definitely you can reconstruct the Hilbert space of the higher dimensional theory.
Yeah.
So that's probably a big piece of the evidence that the path is unique, right?
Yeah. I will come back to this at the end of my talk, because this boundary bulk duality have been such a important issue in it, also in string theory, right? So there's a lot of this kind of boundary bulk duality thing going on. So today I'm going to give a very tautological statement about the boundary bulk duality.
Well, this depends on the perspective, right? Suppose you have two topological orders, A and B, which share in a gap boundary.
Yeah.
Then a gap domain wall. Then certainly it's not unique because on either side there is a higher dimensional topological order.
What do you mean here you can have two different?
Yes.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, yes, you can have two different, but if these two exactly same.
No, I mean suppose you consider torus.
Yeah.
And you can cut it, you don't really need to cut it.
Yeah.
I mean, you cut it torus in two halves, and on one side is topological order,
yeah,
the other side is another topological order.
Yeah.
They share in a gap the domain wall between them.
Yeah.
Then your statement, from that perspective, your statement is not correct. Unless you fold the space such that they both share in a gap the boundary.
This is a very important remark. You know, it's a very important remark because then you have to fold it. You have to fold it. You see, by my definition, you see, this, you're talking about this situation, right? This is not a bulk, okay? Only together. For example, you can even have this, right? Then neither of them, any line here is not a bulk. Only thing, what you have to do, you have to fold it. So you have to fold it like this. So this thing together is a bulk. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very... I was planning to make this remark, but somehow I forgot it. Yeah, but that's, thank you for brought it up. Yeah, this is the meaning of bulk. Yeah. All right. So now I want to. Can I even say theorem? Hey, this is just my way of highlighting some important statement in my talk. That's all. You know, it's not okay. But I want to highlighting it is because. It's myself and all this is. Oh, by the way, I forgot it. All this work has come from my joint work with Xiaogang Wen. Okay, so far. Okay, yeah. It's bad that I didn't mention my collaborator. But okay. So because the bulk is unique, so in the future, if you have a C, N. Well, I can also not using n plus one. Okay, but it's a space. All the subscript is space time dimension. Okay, okay. Since the box is unique, I will give a notation for the box. Okay, this is my notation for the box. Box. All right, trivial phase. Okay? This is true. Why? Everything is trivial, so let's prove them. Okay. So you have a CN and you have a Bok, okay? But you can also view this as a domain wall between the trivial phase, or empty phase if you like. I mean, the trivial phase, let's call it trivial phase, yeah? Sorry, N plus one, all right? They share exactly the same Bok. But the Bok of this one is trivial. The Bok of this one is trivial. It's just this. So that's why you got that. Okay? So the funny thing is that, okay, the Bok of the Bok is trivial. Notice, very important thing is that everything here, when I talk about a phase, I'm talking about open disk. Okay? This is a dual. You must find it very interesting. It's a dual two. Another on a closed manifold. A boundary of boundary is empty. Right? Okay, it's some kind of a dual statement of that. Eraser again. Okay. So this leads to homology theory. Clearly, this will lead to cohomology. Then we have a exact sequence. Let's this be the set, okay? Set of one. Right. Okay, you got an exact sequence of this. What?
Got a lot of things that are not in the image and whose center is taken.
A lot of not in the image. What do you mean?
There are a lot of two plus one shot of logic that appears, which is not the center of something.
Oh, yeah.
Whose center is you?
Exactly. So let me give you some remark about that. I just about to give you the remark. The example. So for in 2+1D, in 2+1D. So well, you, let me put a in two. Let me give some in 2+1D. So it's C3, right? C3 is, let me call that exact. If C3 is in the image of Z2, okay, the C3 is called closed. If CN is Z is in the kernel. Well, yeah. So okay. So there are many of such kind of things. So. But what we know is that if I define it this way, then the C3 is those modular tensor category given by Drinfield center of some unitary fusion category. Okay, those modulus categories are called exact, and all modulus sensor categories are closed. This is a little contradicting to the TQFT point of view, because TQFT we know that as we're speaking to our EFU theory, modulus sensor category is anomalous because there's framing anomaly. But in my case, no, because I'm thinking about the open disk. There's trivial framing. Okay. Is okay. So modular sensor category is closed, is normally free according to this definition. That's a remark. Okay, so you have plenty. And what is the cohomology group? If you use so far there's no group yet. Maybe my time is really, but I can. All right. So if you want a group. So I want to make a remark about those. how to get a group. So far it's just a set, right? I didn't even say, but let me make a remark. So you have a topological order, it might have a bulk, okay? But you can always just stack it with another one, just move it closer to each other and don't do anything. Okay, don't introduce any coupling, you know, okay? Just put one level on the top of the other. I will call that, okay? So this become a new topological order, which I'll use this notation to denote it. Okay, box tensor. All right. So using this product, this set is a commutative monoid. Commutative, because this product is a commutative monoid. Okay. So you can, but there's no inverse, right? You have some topological order. Well, you have a long-range entanglement and long-range entanglement. You cannot cancel them. All right. Unless you introduce this exact sequence of commutative monoid, okay? But if you want a group, you can define the following way. So I'll give you some example to get a group. How to get a group? Well, you introduce some kind of a further relations, okay? So you quotient this set by a relation, and you got another one, okay, and there have a group structure. The relation is this: one topological order and another topological order are equivalent. Actually, it's called a Witt equivalent. Witt equivalent if they can be connected by a gap domain wall. Two phase can be connected by a gap domain wall. I'm a little sloppy here. I cheated slightly, but anyway, okay. Then you can get a group. You quotient this relations, you get a group. This group is called Witt group in this case. So you can check that. In that case, if you quotient off, you get an exact sequence of so-called Witt group, and the Euro Witt group is H upper three group cohomology, cohomology group, not group homology. Okay, that's a remark. Okay, yes. Exact sequence of this is the exact sequence of commutative monoid, but if you quotient something, you can find the inverse, then become a group.
Isn't the Witt group already the cohomology?
I'm sorry.
Isn't the Witt group already the cohomology of the sequence?
Yeah, the Witt group is a cohomology of this group. So example.
How do you put the map between that gland and
that data set? Well, it's turned out this cohomology is sort of trivial because the other one, all of the maps, just trivial one.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think there is anything in the Witt group in more than two plus one dimension?
For higher dimension, I don't really know. Yeah, I don't really know what's going on. But I think for high dimension, there are a lot of things is similar. These are also a group cohomology group, and also the also in the sequence. So it's kind of trivial. So remark is that there is an example to get a group, but actually you have many ways to get a group. Okay. So this is not unique. This is a Witt equivalent. You can introduce many other equivalents. So in our paper, we discussed a family of equivalents.
What do you need in equivalence?
I don't know. I just remark. Yeah. To get the Euro familiar cohomology group. That's all. It's just remark. It's not I don't know. But this remark is used. It relates to what you just said. You said you mentioned something that some category is sort of exact and some is closed. Are there example of those? Yes. And when you quotient this too, you got a Witt group. So it's classified by Witt group. Yeah, that's the reason I mentioned that is related to your remark. Maybe I shouldn't, but it's a long reply to a short remark. I'm constantly troubled to finding Which part should I erase? Maybe this. Okay. So what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna do all right, so I wanna do the following. Okay, so a stronger unique Bok hypothesis. Okay, so not only for a boundary, gap to boundary, you can have a unique Bok. Now I propose, if you have two, let's say A N, B N, right? You can have let's say M N minus one dimension lower. Okay, you also have a Bok. Okay. So let me. So not only this determine this uniquely, this also determine this uniquely. You can use a similar argument by, you know, defining this phase you know, as a, in the neighborhood of that. Similar argument. Okay. So I propose the stronger unique Bok hypothesis. Of course, you can have, I don't know how to draw it, you know, you can think about the higher codimension defects, okay? If this is unique, so this will be, I would denote this as a ZNAN, okay? Maybe I'll put a zero here, because I wanna give a different notation for that. So you get a hierarchy of this correspondence. One. All right, and you have B here, you have, so this will be B here, okay? All right, because it is unique. So I wanna do some kind of dimension reduction. So when you look at this too, everything is topological, right? You look from far away, this is just one thing. So this can be combined into one. You shrink this, you get that, all right? So what does this mean is that the Bok of this one is actually equal to so let me first use the notation. I'll draw a picture for what do I mean by this step, this. Okay, I'm using the following thing to represent let's say xn and yn, and here is en minus one, okay? So this is my definition of this notation. But it's not, I mean, I also assume that when I shrink it, become one dimensional lower, it's the same. For this, I can give some lattice model to describe it. Do I have time for that? You can see it from toric code. Yes, eraser. Okay. So, but maybe let me skip the example, okay? If you want an example, I can show you in the toric code how to understand this thing. This actually, in mathematics, is called tensor product. In toric code, you can check that this process exactly corresponding to a tensor product between categories. All right. So, but I want to make the following. So, the full statement of boundary Bok duality. Boundary, maybe boundary Bok relations is. Is the category, oops, let me just put one. This is a category, and the morphism is given by domain wall, and the morphism is given by domain wall. This is actually a functor. So so the proposal of a boundary bulk relation for topological order of n dimension is a functor of higher category. So this is I don't even know what the category is. It's n category. No, n plus one category. It's not important. Okay, some higher category to higher category. I think that's a complete statement of it. It's not trivial. So let me. should I tell you a mathematical theorem? So this statement can be checked in the lower dimension in level one model. Okay, in level one model, you can check this can be realized. And mathematically, you can prove a theorem. The theorem is proved by myself. And okay, so in 2 plus 1D, 2 plus 1D, I mean, let's say when n equal 1 plus 1. Okay, when n equal 1 plus 1. This functor, functor is well defined. Not only well defined, it's fully faithful even. Fully faithful. Oh, no, not only fully faithful, sorry. Since I'm using this, it's an equivalence. Equivalence. So I probably want to illustrate that by a lattice model. Yeah, let me use illustrate that because you probably get tired by all this abstract nonsense. No? Actually, I was planning to do this example at the end, but. So as long as you see the uniqueness, you can see this functor. So let me give you a toric code. So finally, you can see something. Square lattice. Okay. So I have a defect. Okay. Toric code. So you're all familiar with toric code, right? So here I have on the vertex I have a AV operator. On each plaquette, let's say P, I have a BP operator, right? Now I want to introduce some, let's say, so this lattice, this line is 5, this line is 2, this line is 3. I don't know why I use this letter, but the strange labeling. And 7, here is 8, this is 9. Okay, so I want to introduce a new BP operator of this, okay? So that would be, what is it? Sigma 2, Z, sigma 5, Z. This is a Pauli matrix. Okay. And for this one, I will define a new plaquette operator, which is X. 7, Z, 8, Z, 9, Z. Okay? And for this one, let me label them. 6, 17, 18, 19, 20. So this strange plaquette, okay, there is, okay, so let me describe what happens. So you have one normal toric code, okay? You have another toric code, okay? When you piece them together, you introduce a dislocation, okay? So then you shift it, then in here, there's nothing. You just shift it, there's no physical degree on this line, okay? On this dotted line, there is no physical degree, okay? But then you wanna shift it back, But here's the boundary. Okay, here's the boundary. Here's the boundary. All right, then you get something strange thing here, right? This strange thing, you can introduce a Q operator. This Q operator is defined by sigma 6x, sigma 17y, and the sigma 18z, sigma 19z, and the sigma 20z. All right, you can show that to this commuter with everyone. Okay, then I want to show that this statement is true. The uniqueness is true. So if you know what happened here is unique determinist, and if you know what this is, well, you also can know what this is. Okay.
But with multiple M's that have the same center.
What?
You could have multiple M's that have the same center.
Yeah. In general, yeah. But in this 2D case, it is an equivalence. Well, you might be puzzled because you can have a different one corresponding to same up to Morait equivalence. Okay, but on a morphism, this sign is unique. Yeah, it's so what happened? You see, there's no physical degree of freedom here, okay? So, by the way, if I using that language to analyze it, then on this boundary, the magnetic flux condense. So you only have two particles, okay? So this is a representation category of Z2. And inside this, you got an E, you got an M, you got an F. This is a category of the Drinfield center of Rep C, okay? And here you don't introduce any physical degree of freedom, so this category is defined by a bimodule, just category vector space. Category vector space, but the excitation on this, you have four excitations. So I'm not gonna say too much about it, but if this that logic is correct, then you are expecting that what happened in the neighborhood of these, you should get something trivial, because this is a vector space. So this should be give you the vector space according to the definition over there. Okay, this should be the category vector space. And you double check. Yes, because in this neighborhood, you can check all the particle condensed. E condensed, M condensed, everything condensed. There's nothing there. So this category is really category vector space, a trivial category. But in general, this statement for all Langevin model is true. Okay. All right, actually, this is only a preparation for what I'm gonna say. but you can see that there is a, but at least I state what the general statement of boundary block relation is. What is it? It's a rational. Let's see. Let me just say it. Just state what I want to say in a few sentences, that's all. Actually, I was planning to show you something crazy in the following sense. We don't know how to define topological order, right? But we want to give a rather rigorous definition of a morphism between two topological order. This is totally crazy because physicists never think about, I have one physical system, I have another physical system, okay. What do you mean by mapping one to the other? So the idea is we will introduce, so that means we'll introduce a notion, a morphism between two topological order. It's a little bit crazy. So that means I confess that we don't have a definition of topological order. But you know, let's just assume that I'm not religious, but let's assume we believe that the definition exists. Once we believe the definition exists, then we can use the existing definition to define a morphism, a map between two topological order. I'm not going to give a definition to because I don't think I have enough time. So, but let me just state. Okay, let me just state. So this notion can be introduced sort of rigorous in the sense that, you know, if you assume the definition of topological order exists, you can introduce this concept. Okay, this concept is totally non-trivial. Okay, I don't think I have time. Then, okay, after this concept introduced, I want to prove a theorem. So I don't even know how you call that the mathematics or physics. But this is totally categorical thinking. So category theory, okay, say we don't care about the object. We don't care about the object we do a study, but we care about the relation between them. Okay, so this is really a study of the category of topological order. Okay, so we can define morphism. All right. And once you define the morphism, you can prove the following thing. That will be really, okay. Let me see. Okay. There is a canonical morphism from there is a morphism from this to this. I have to be, I will use this notation P. P just means forget its higher, this is an N plus one topological order, right? I don't have time to define it. So just forget about the N plus one structure. Okay, forget about, it just means, well, you just think about a trivial domain wall. Okay, trivial domain on a closed topological order. This is closed, okay? So it's normally free. So just take the trivial domain wall. This can be more precisely defined, but it will take me 10 minutes. I will define it. But I don't have that, so I can, let me just skip it. Okay, there is a morphism like this, canonical. All right, and then the main result is, the main result is this, the pair P, Z, N, C, N, and let me call this map M is universal, or even more precise, terminal. I'll explain, among all pairs. All such pairs. So that means, let me simplify the diagram. I cheat a little bit, but yeah. So that means if you have another one, if you have another pair, that means X, N, and F. Okay, then this in mathematics means exist unique such a diagram commute. That's our main theorem. Totally not understandable. let me give you. I will give you a better statement of the theorem. Okay, after. After this so-called the terminal is called the universal property in category theory. It characterized this stuff by this property up to equivalence. Okay? So the remark is this universal property is the universal property of the center of an algebra in mathematics, in any category, in any NES category, in math. So therefore, the true theorem is the Bach is the center. For example, in Tory code, well, in Tory code, right? You have this, and the bulk is given by the Dreamfield Center. Okay, but this is not very illuminating. I was planning to tell you why this is true, why it's a center. You want to see this? I think I made my statement, the main statement. I can provide much more details, but let me, before I finish, I really want people to get interested in this because there are a lot of boundary bulk dualities in mathematics, in physics, in string theory, in condensed matter. So looks what we have proved here is sort of tautological. Okay, so I want to also, for people interested in quantum computings, might be interesting this because the notion of center, the notion of center is very wild. I mean, many, many things that you think is not understandable is turned out to be center. Okay, it's actually, it actually looks like entropy in some sense. Okay, I don't know how to say that. Okay, well, then you need to know what the center is. You want me to explain why it's a center? I can explain it to you in a very elementary way, why this is a center. So let's take A as algebra. Okay, I will finish after I finish this example. Okay, I will explain to you why this is a center. So A is algebra, favorite algebra you like, okay? Then what is the center of A? We all know what it is. It's just those elements in A such that it commutes with every element in A. Right? Okay, that's the you get what you got in a algebra book, any algebra book. Okay, but this set theoretical definition is horrible. In the modern mathematics, we don't like set, we like category. So we don't want to use this. Well, a better one. I want to tell you a better one is to consider the bimodule map from A to A. The set of bimodule map from A to A. Oh, okay. Bimodule maps from A to A. Okay, that's a better definition. I won't prove that to you, but I will prove the universal property for you. Okay, I'm gonna show you why this is true. So for the center of A, there is a canonical morphism given by multiplication because I already defined it this way. So this is a part of A, right? So I can define the multiplication, right? This is well defined, right? I want to prove that this morphism is universal. Okay, it turned out that this M is not arbitrary. It's an algebra homomorphism. This is a very strong statement because A tensor A, this multiplication is not an algebra homomorphism. It's not. Only when you replace it by center, it is. Okay? Then you can prove that if you have another algebra, you have an algebra homomorphism F, okay? Then in particular, it map this to F x 1, you can show that this is in the center. This commutes with every A. It commutes with every A in it. So this define a map. So make the diagram commute.
What is chi?
Chi is any other algebra. Any other algebra. So the notion of center can be defined in this way. It's a bit strange, okay? But the argument is that the bulk is center. That you can also show Dreamfield Center, Mueger Center, a lot of famous center is this, yeah. I finished my talk, essentially. Sorry for that.
Fine. No.
I'm a bit skeptical. All such and such relations, they certainly work in 2 plus 1 dimensions.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
there's a key property in 2 plus 1 dimensions yeah. because there is a one-to-one correspondence between ground states and excitations. So yeah. here, in 2 plus 1 dimensions, you have the same mathematical structure that mm-hmm. can describe both excitations and
yeah.
ground states.
Yeah.
Then you can, for example, use a Bradley tensor category
to
describe the entire topological order. And then there's these relations between boundary and bulk.
Yeah.
But in higher dimensions, this is far from being clear.
Yeah. So my statement is that
there's no such a correspondence between ground states and excitations.
Yeah. So
what do you mean by?
Okay. So what I mean by is this: if the unique Bach hypothesis is true, then it's center. That's my. So let me put it here. If the unique Bach hypothesis is true, then Bach is center. I don't even know what the higher dimensional description of topological order really is. I don't know. I don't care.
He's not saying that it's a line. He's saying something.
Something, yeah.
Which has a center or something.
Then it had to be the center. Okay. It's a non-trivial statement. Yeah, it's non-trivial statement in the sense that you see, from categorical theory point of view, example is always hard. Example is non-trivial. I mean, it's really weird. I mean, I don't. It's a weird.
No, let's thank you again.
Thank you.